Greetings, programs, and welcome to the Awesome Friday podcast, the only podcast on the internet that features two new movie reviews every week. We're entirely unique in that way, completely. And I also have a bridge in San Francisco that I wish to sell to. My name is Matthew, and I am your host. And with me today is Simon, my co-host. Hi. How are you, Simon?
Good. It was very nice to see you last night in the flesh.
Title of your sex tape.
I was having my sex tape. to share delicious food and maybe even a comment about a book, although sometimes it's hard to get a word in edgeways in our book club. Sometimes you just got to sit back and let the wave of conversation flow over you.
That's true.
But it was very nice. It's good. I'm okay. I'm just busy, just fucking busy all the time. These days I'm barely managing to watch the things that we have to watch for the weekend. So it's always nice when I can get to actually recording and actually have seen all the stuff.
It turns
personal victory.
Turns out we're in a very late stage of capitalism, so. And you have two children, so being busy, you know, makes sense. Not that it's good, just that it makes sense.
It's really funny how, like, you've known me for a long time now, both pre and post children, and I'm sure you can see, like, the busyness has never ended. The constant, like, thing has never ended. But what's really interesting about my kids now is that the busyness has changed completely to, like, personal interaction. Well, no, it's like interaction, and there was a lot of chauffeuring in that middle stage, and now feels way more just like interacting with each other's lives more. Does that make sense? Like, especially my son now.
So that does make sense, and I'll tell you why. It's because you are a good, involved parent.
I really want to be. That's really important to me, but that does mean that I'm basically, we do stuff all the time because they're really cool to hang out with. I really enjoy hanging out with them as people, which is really nice.
And there's lots of parents. Like, I don't know how on TikTok you are, but like, there's a guy on TikTok that I follow who mostly talks about Canadian politics, but he's also a teacher and he answers questions about being a teacher. And let me tell you, anytime he describes a good parent, I basically go like, oh yeah, that's what Simon does. And that's what my sister does. And anytime he describes a bad parent, I'm just like, why do you have children? Like, why are you so disengaged?
Yeah. You know, like, that's the thing. You got,
and it's present. Really interesting hearing it from the teacher's perspective as well. So I'll link him to you if I haven't done so before.
Yeah, later. I'd like to see that.
But he mostly talks about Canadian politics, which is also just, he's basically my equivalent of like Last Week Tonight or something, but for Canada. Right. So,
I'd like to see that. That's the thing. It's just being present at all times means that you've got to give up. My book, I haven't read a book club book in God knows how long. Just read all my readings with them, all my movies with them. It's like we're sharing everything. And so, and it's really, really nice, don't get me wrong, but there's no other time. My me time is falling asleep on the couch after my son goes to bed, which is also really nice. I like doing that. So, the stuff we watch. Although I really want to show him Godzilla X Kong, which is one of the films we're talking about. I think he will really dig that film because it's a great film. But things like our other film, like, that's just not really family viewing, is it?
No, so I mean, tricky. Not. It's a good movie. It's just also not.
Yes.
It's not a film for non-adults, should I say?
Yes.
And not because it's terribly, terribly violent. I mean, it's not violent and explicit, but like mostly just that like it's got a lot going on. And I feel like, you know, probably some prefrontal development needs to happen from, you know.
There's one section of this film that is a horrible close-up of something that's happening. In fact, in the news, because I suspect it's happened again this weekend, and there's just some things I just don't want them to know yet. You know what I mean? There's some, mm-hmm. and I am raising a son, and it's terrifying to me that he has got a big sensitive heart and he is mainly oblivious to girls. He just wants, if girls were a sport, he would play them. How's that for an album title? Like,
that's not a great way to phrase that, just for the record. Like, if you're trying to keep him out of the manosphere, then that is not the best way to phrase
it. The great thing as well is that he doesn't have any of my social shyness at all. Like last night, after he played football for 2 hours, he went back and we've got long family friends, and she's a girl his age, and she had two other girls her age, and they're all sat around in her room, and he sat with them, and he's just completely chill. And you know what? That's going to drive girls crazy, because he's super handsome, he's tall, he's blonde, and he is totally chill, like totally oblivious to everything, which makes him like relaxed and kind of aloof and goofy and stupid. And he's got it all. Bless him. But I do love that about him. But yeah, it's terrifying to me. We'll talk about this, I think, a little bit later when we get into the movie. But the potential for someone to put an idea in his head that sticks, that turns into this kind of idiocy and this kind of hatred. I feel like I spend my whole life just making sure he's got a good heart and good sense of what's right and what's wrong and how to treat other people, because it just seems so easy. Especially, he's not on social media. He's asked to be on social media, and I've said no, because it's just poison. There's so much poison on there,
mm-hmm.
and I hate to be that. Well, I don't hate to be that kind of parent. But I know I'm that kind of parent now. It's restricting things like social media, but I don't think it does any good. I genuinely don't.
Maybe,
and you're
maybe he shouldn't
a lot
until
more
he's 18. So
yeah.
When he can make his own choices.
Yeah. I don't know. You're on it a lot more than me. And I left it for a very particular reason. And I still feel that reason very strongly whenever I dip back into Twitter for something. Because you still can't beat Twitter for breaking news or like reactions to something like the game BAFTAs. There's no other information about that anywhere apart from Twitter. And that was what Twitter did really, really well before that fucking idiot got his hands on it.
It's really actually frustrating. I don't mean to hijack the conversation in terms of like what social media even is these days, but it's actually really frustrating that like Twitter still does breaking information in a way that no other one does, mm-hmm. which means it's very difficult to let go of, because I would actually argue that Threads, which is by Meta and based off of Instagram, but it's Instagram. It's Instagram, but for text, in the same way that Instagram used to be Twitter, but for photos. But Instagram or Threads has way better engagement and a way more positive vibe. Like, but it is absolutely shit at disseminating breaking information or news. And I feel like until it can do that in a reliable way, it's never going to be able to replace Twitter. Mm. And also Meta's whole position on things like posting about politics is just garbage. So there seem to be actively working against it. Being a place where you can go and like spread info. But like in terms of say like getting people to click through something you've written, Threads is way better. And in generating like discussion that is generally positive and thoughtful, Threads is way better. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just that like a lot of people seem really concerned about not letting Threads turn into another Twitter, which is great. But it also just doesn't have the like critical mass of users yet still. So I mean, it kind of does, but it doesn't like Twitter did at its heyday, you know.
I'm surprised. Maybe you've got way more to say this than I do. I dip into Threads maybe once a month to try and find something, and I look at a lot of reactions to things, and it feels like Threads is quite significantly getting more bitter in the kind of people that are using it and the way they respond to things. I've noticed on Instagram a lot of the, and TikTok, a lot of the comments are coming way, way more bitter and kind of accusatory and just horrible. There's a lot of poison in the kind of things people want to say on social media. And I feel like Threads was kind of avoiding that a little bit to begin with, but I guess as the user base has grown, so the idiots have come flocking. Do you agree with that?
The answer to that is that, and this is, again, it's part of the reason why it'll never be great at breaking news, is that the feed is entirely algorithmic. So if you see a negative comment and then like engage with it in any way, the algorithm learns from that, and it learns super quickly. So you just kind of have to be more cognizant of what's going on in your feed and what you're actually clicking on and interacting with. And if you interact with things that are positive, like I've made a very dedicated effort to interact with people who are like film lovers, not like internet film lovers, like, you know, like Snyder Bros, but like people who like seem genuinely interested in like film and movies and positive takes. And like, and so my feed is actually pretty great. But yeah, anytime like TikTok, anytime on TikTok, I end up clicking through to comments to see like the video that the comment was on. And oftentimes my TikTok feed is full of like all kinds of crazy political BS that I'm able to cut through because I'm an adult, but I can definitely see how someone might get like radicalized by some of it. But again, it's because the TikTok algorithm is also super aggressive. And like, if you click through to a video that's bad, like it's going to be like, oh, he watched that video that's bad. We should give him more of that. So it is as much about curating. It's not just about the user base growing, which is definitely true, as people do. A lot of people have migrated from one to the other, from Twitter to whatever else. Mm-hmm. But it's also about like, you can curate your way out of that. Not entirely, but you can curate your way out of that if you just put a little mindfulness into what you're actually doing, which sounds like a lot of work, but at the same time, like, that's what you do in real life, right? Like, you don't hang out with assholes in real life, and if you keep hanging out with them and they keep being assholes, you stop hanging out with them. So it's just the same thing, just in digital form. So yeah, that's my treatise on the current state of social media. Threads is the most rewarding one for me to post on, and Twitter's the one I still post on because it still does have the most eyeballs.
I think you're far more able to ignore the negativity there as well. I think that's the thing that really drove me away, was the negativity. And even trying to curate, like, you have to be exposed to that negativity to block it. And I just found it easier to just to cold turkey it and to close it. And
the level of effort diminishes over time. Right? Yeah. It's a lot harder at the start than it is like a couple of months in, because like as you've curated your feed, it's going to show you less stuff you're not going to want to see. And like, that is sort of the problem, right? Like, I'm curating my feed to be like positive takes about film, but lots of people end up like deep in the manosphere because it's so aggressive. And so I'm basically exploiting what is normally a terrible pipeline to be something good for me specifically.
So would you say, even though Threads isn't giving you the news as it happens, is it better for trying to form a group of like-minded people who are interested in things to promote what you're doing within that sphere? Is it better than Twitter for that?
Absolutely.
Well, I might give that a go then.
And I don't like, there's a feel-good story. This is going to take a minute to tell, but there's a feel-good story that's happened on Threads over the past couple of weeks where, there's these two young women. One's handle is Doctor's Crusher, and the other one is Voy Edits. And they met and bonded on Threads, like digitally. One's in Australia and the other's in Germany or something. And they started like messaging one another over their mutual horniness for Captain Janeway. and last week or the week before, they flew to Singapore together and had a first date that lasted a week, and now they're in love. And like, what? It has been the most adorable thing to watch. These two young women who are like 24, 25, like finding their person in real time. To the point where, like, because they live on opposite sides of the world, someone started a GoFundMe so they could have a second date, and like, it's already thousands of dollars in. And like, I was like, fuck yeah, I'll give them 25 euros to go be in love. Like, why wouldn't I fund that at this point? Like, the world is going to shit. I'm going to fund something that's going to make someone feel good. Like, it's a whole thing. And they are so fucking cute. Like, it's ridiculous, and you should, if there's an article about it, you should read it. But it's just great to like see them pop up in my feed, like hitting on one another, basically, because it's so adorable.
That is lovely.
But I just that and kind of thing. I don't think that kind of thing would happen on Twitter. Certainly not right. In the last decade. Like it might have in the early days, but it would not happen in the last 10, right?
Well, that's good, because the thing I miss from Twitter the most is when I first joined using years ago, I got to contact artists that I love and writers that I love and became friends with a couple of them outside of just talking about their writing, and that's been lovely as well. So I do miss that side for sure. So maybe I will download Threads. Sure. Let's give Zuckerberg some more information for his VR utopia.
Good. Good, good.
All right.
Good.
Should we talk about some films then?
We should talk about some films. Let's talk about the new French movie we watched this week.
Yes.
Because reasons. And so we're going to talk about The Beast, and then we're going to talk about Godzilla X Kong. And so, Simon, I feel like you have a better grasp on this movie than I do. So why don't you give us a very brief as possible.
Yeah.
And this will be like an hour long probably, and I'm not ragging on you. It's just like it's a complicated movie. But why don't you give us the briefest of spoiler-free synopses of Bertrand Bonello's The Beast, starring Léa Seydoux and George MacKay.
Well, this is a vibes movie. This is a sci-fi vibes movie. So if you saw Under the Skin, if you saw La Jetée, and thought, I like this sci-fi, that or Primer is a good example. Sci-fi that tells you it's sci-fi through editing and through narrative rather than special effects. Or at least the first half of Under the Skin anyway. Then this might be a film for you, because I really dug it. It really worked for me. And basically the premise is that there is a future, there is some kind of dystopian future where you can undergo a process to have your DNA cleansed to remove trauma, because in that environment, heightened emotions are seen as things that should be removed. So they're not removing emotions completely, they're just muting them in order to make people more kind of low-key happy rather than feeling huge spikes of happiness and terror and fear. So you can go through this process of basically clearing, like bleaching your DNA to get rid of all this generational trauma, because they recognize that we all have multi-generational past lives. Like, this is a fact in this dystopia. It is a proven note of science that we have all had past lives, and our DNA holds the trauma from one past life to another. And the film kind of pieces this together slowly, and it's based on a book about a guy who has a sense of foreboding that something bad is going to happen. Something is coming. This is his beast, and it takes over his life. It's all he can think about. And so we follow Léa Seydoux's character as we go into the chunks of her past lives in different time frames, beautifully shot with different costumes and killer soundtrack to this movie as well. But her relationship with George MacKay's character, as they sort of oscillate and orbit around each other through each of these timelines, becomes important as well. And basically this procedure that she's trying to have done forces her to almost relive some of the trauma, almost like scrubbing through videotapes in your past lives. But it's not told in a linear fashion. We're diving between the future and the various parts of the past, and we're never really told what's going on until the end. And so you really have to just sit and vibe with it, because what you see is not necessarily accurate to what the truth is. In fact, the very first scene in this movie is Léa Seydoux acting out scenes in front of a green screen, and things she is told things will be projected around her. And I think this is a key narrative hint for the entire movie. And it does, as the film draws to its crescendo, it does do some very interesting things using the structure of film and editing itself as part of the story, which I think is really, really clever. But ultimately, it's a very interesting take on this whole Cloud Atlas, souls that are intertwined through multiple lives. And then what if there's trauma involved in those souls as well? The question is, what is your hate for me? Is the hate you feel stronger than the love? And whether all this trauma makes us who we are ultimately? I think it asks big questions like that. And Léa Seydoux is sensational in this film, and it's definitely something you need to watch a couple of times. But if you find the time, it's 2.5 hours long, so it's not a short movie. But if you can sit with it and just let it wash over you, it's pretty great. It's pretty great. I can't really talk too much more about it because part of the joy of watching this film, like any vibes movie, is slowly piecing together what the fuck is going on. And you're going to finish this movie basically unsure as to what most of it actually meant. And that's okay. It doesn't all have to be answered. But there's some pretty fundamental questions asked here. And I think it's a super interesting film. And the kind of sci-fi I really like, actually. Really intellectual and but not pretentious, and very well acted and well put together, and technically very interesting as well. That's my take on it. Anyway, it's not really a very specific coverage of any of it, really, but it's not a very specific film. Just some really, really interesting things with time frames and the music from those time frames, and it's gorgeous.
It's very difficult to be specific about it. There's only one thing that I will say specifically, that there's a section set in 2014 in which a character is literally based on Elliot Rodger, the like mass shooter who killed a bunch of people. And that section is very difficult. And it's also the longest, I believe.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Section of the whole movie. And George MacKay is a great young actor. I say young, but he's like 30, I think. And he's just perfect in all. Him and Seydoux both are great in all of the sections of this film, in everything it asks both of them to do. It must have required a real level of commitment to the things they were going to portray, in particular because his character is based on Elliot Rodger, and that is difficult because that is a recent event. But he's so good. He's compelling in all three time frames. And I would argue, I think in the 1910, the earliest time frame, I think is his best personally, which is a real sort of like Downton Abbey type period piece with costumes and, you know, English and French propriety and love that has to bleed through these are like exterior shells. It's by far the most romantic and easiest section of all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I do legitimately think it's his best one. And also he just apparently learned French for the role, I think you said.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
And he's really good in both English and French. So, and Léa Seydoux, I think, is one of the, she's been nominated for a ton of like Césars, and she's won a Palme d'Or and a few other things. But like, in terms of like Hollywood, I think she's very underrated. I don't know what else I can say about this movie. Like, I feel like I finished watching it a few minutes before we started recording, and I feel like I needed to have finished watching it a couple of days ago so I could have processed what I had watched. And I think I think I'll need to watch it at least one more time to really sort of like cement what I am interpreting from it. But like, this is a movie that has a ton of things to say about love and loss and fear of connection and connection and all of these things. And it is, I think, pretty profoundly affecting. If you can approach it and if you can vibe with it, basically, as you said. And I think it's great. I think it's shocking that this is a Canadian co-production, and I think it's kind of shocking. I don't think it's up for any CSAs, even though it would have qualified for the 2020 or the CSAs that are coming up. And I'm kind of shocked by that because it seems like the kind of thing that would be nominated. But it also apparently got rejected by Cannes, so who knows what's going on there. Maybe there's some loophole. Maybe it's not Canadian enough, even though it's co-produced by Xavier Dolan. And anyway, it's too difficult to talk about. But it's if you can approach it with the right sort of mindset and the right sort of emotional preparedness, or maybe the opposite of that, it's a really affecting movie.
There's a lot to say about the proliferation of technology in our society and how much we lean on it and trust it and how much it integrates into our lives and how much it disrupts our lives. Really interesting thing where there's a modern day version, the incel version of events that happens has a very distinct technology in it that doesn't exist, that is just embedded in this like parallel dimension of another version of our reality where there is this specific technology that I don't want to specify because it is a pretty major theme that carries over a lot of other parts of the film as well that really makes you... It really reinforces what the film's trying to say about identity and what makes us who we are and can that develop. It has a lot to say about that as well. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's a lot of film. But I don't mean that as in a bad way. I mean in a way where like if you give this movie the attention it deserves, it'll be very rewarding. And I think you should be prepared to watch it more than once. I know that's going to turn some people off, but I really feel like it's one of those films where you'll get to the end and you'll have a lot of feelings about it, as both of us have. but then the second time through, you'll be able to pick up on some cues that you probably missed the first time and it'll be rewarding in that way. Like, I think I'm not trying to say you won't get it the first time through. I'm saying that you might get it more deeply the second time through, which I think is a good thing. I think, you know, some great art does that sometimes.
Yeah. It's got the last third of this film is incredibly challenging right up until the final frame. It's hard to know. I just want to say it made me feel 1984 as well. I don't want to say anything more about that because that's also a spoiler. And I think Sidhu really carries it beautifully. I mean, she is a fantastic actor and we knew that, but she's front and center of this and she really, really pieces it all together beautifully, I think.
I think everyone in it is good. I think even I don't want to spoil who they play, but and I'm gonna mispronounce their name, I think, but Guslaji Malanda is a French actress. She had a big breakout a year or two ago in a movie called Saint-Omer, and she's great. And I can't say who she is or what she does in the movie because I think it's too big of a spoiler. But she's also great. And it's amazing to me as a newcomer, and George MacKay is not a newcomer, but as newcomers, how well they hold their own with Léa Seydoux, who's doing, I think, some great work. Some of probably the best work in her career in terms of just straight acting, like capital A acting anyway. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So how many stars are you going to give this movie though? Like I've been thinking about this for not that long. Cause I literally finished watching it right before we started recording our bonus episode. That's only like 45 minutes ago. So I have not been thinking about this long enough, but how many stars are you going to give it? Cause I'm on the fence.
I thought about this as well because it feels so much like, the kind of film I'm going to think about for a long time, like I did with Under the Skin, which I the more time I get away from that film, the more I realize how incredible it is. And it feels like it's one of those films. So I'm going to go with 4 stars.
Yeah, that's where I'm landing to, 4 stars. For the same reasons you're talking about. Like, this is a film that's going to reward over time. And not that it's not rewarding the first time, but it's going to reward. I think it's going to deliver more each time that it gets revisited. And mm-hmm. I look forward to that.
You know, we talk a lot about what all films are cinema films, but we always seem to talk about that in terms of spectacle, which our next film will be. But I really wish I'd seen this as I saw Under the Skin, which is midday on a Tuesday in an empty cinema, because I want this film to end in a dark room with me in it. Do you know what I mean? That kind of the final beats of this film, especially with the last thing it does, is entirely surprising. And I just think if this gets a cinema run, which I'm not even sure it will, I guess it is
having a limited release, isn't it? Getting a limited a Canadian release this week. It comes out on the 19th of April. It's being released by Maison Four Thirds, and so it is getting a Canadian theatrical run. I would recommend seeing it in a cinema.
Yeah.
If only because I would say this is a film, and so part of when I say films are cinema films, you're not wrong that it's often for spectacle. But in these days, in my old age, I actually tend to think of it more of as a freedom or a restriction from distraction. Mm. And I feel like this is a movie that if you have the opportunity to be distracted, you are going to miss something fundamental.
Yeah.
And I feel like. So, like, even, like, I saw Civil War, which I wrote about, and you can read on wherever I put, I think it's For Real. I saw that in a cinema with just, like, five or six other writers, which was great. And that movie has some spectacle, but the reason I appreciated it being in cinema is that, like, that movie needs to be paid attention to. And, like, even just checking your notifications is a big enough distraction to miss something important, right? So... that is why you should see this in a cinema if you can. But if you can't, like, don't be afraid to watch it at home. Just, you know, put your phone down is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an interesting point, actually, because I do get quite easily distracted. And because I often have to watch the films whilst doing other stuff as well, so I can fit them in. And I couldn't do anything when this film was on. It's not just because it's part of it is in French, but it is a visual puzzle box. And it's visually beautiful, and so I couldn't do anything else watching this film. Mm-hmm. So maybe I think I will try and catch it in the cinema for sure. It feels like it's a Rio. It would be really well suited in the Rio if you're a Vancouver local. I think this is prime Rio fodder.
Yeah, more likely it'll be at like the Biff Center, Cinematheque, one of those. And I think it's worth going out of your way to see.
Sure.
And it makes me want to. I've been aware of Bertrand Bonello for quite a while, but I don't think I've actually seen any of his other films. And this makes me want to.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's something to think about. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, 4 stars from both of us. Highly recommend you watch it.
Okay. Well, in that case, let's move on to the complete opposite end of the spectrum. And let's talk about...
It really is.
Let's talk about Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. So this is a film. It is the fifth film in the legendary MonsterVerse following Godzilla, Kong Skull Island, Godzilla King of the Monsters, and Godzilla vs. Kong. It is set approximately 3 years after the end of Godzilla vs. Kong, after the defeat of Mechagodzilla. And now Kong is in the Hollow Earth, where he is living and searching for the rest of his kind, the giant apes. And Godzilla lives on the surface, and he is, I don't know if protecting humanity is the right way to say it, but he is fighting monsters that emerge and threaten humanity. And also resting like a cat in the Roman Colosseum when he's in between fights, like in a real, like, if I fits, I sits kind of way, which is great. It's hard to summarize because so much happens in this movie and there's so much exposition, but basically there's a thing happens and Kong goes on a search and he finds more giant apes and they turn out to be bad. And then he has to team up with Godzilla to beat them. And that is actually, that's basically it, actually. I don't know why I said that, because that is basically what happens. The big bad guy His name is Scar King. He is the king of a tribe of giant apes. He's an orangutan, so you can tell him apart from Kong on screen. And then they fight. And it's great. My opinion of this film is that, and so just to be clear, I like all of the movies in the Legendary MonsterVerse to one degree or another. And I think this is one of the stronger ones. And I would say that it is one of the stronger ones because it gets the balance correct. There is, it's a bit pacey in the middle when it's just following Kong around, but there's a good amount of monster fighting and there's a decent amount of humans talking, but there's not too much. And there's only one group of humans, so you're not cutting back and forth between multiple storylines. It's just the one thing that's happening. It's a very straightforward film. It's very, like, for those of you who know what I'm talking about, it's very, like, mid to late Showa-era Godzilla type movie. Where, like, the humans explain what's going on, like, the reasons why the monsters are about to fight, and then the monsters fight. And they do so mostly in the Hollow Earth, mostly in big bright colors, and I am so glad I saw this on the big screen.
Oh my god.
It's ridiculous. You have a couple of people returning, mainly that would be Rebecca Hall, who is the doctor character, the Kong specialist from the last movie, Dr. Andrews, and her adopted daughter Gia, played by Kaylee Hottle, who's an Iwi native of Skull Island. And they have a really interesting relationship as, like, mother and adopted daughter. Brian Tyree Henry is back as the funny one. Dan Stevens joins the cast as the other funny one. A different kind of funny. The best kind of funny. And they go on this journey through the Hollow Earth to find out the mystery of why the monsters are upset. And then to explain why the monsters have to fight. And there's a lot of exposition. But that's fine. Because mostly it's Rebecca Hall being like, in a cave, being like, I have read these glyphs and this is what they say. And then Dan Stevens being like, far out, man. Like, Dan Stevens has the single best character introduction of any of the people in of these movies. He joins the film when Kong needs a dentist visit. And Dan Stevens plays a kaiju dentist. Who flies in on like a rocket helicopter thing to the tune of I Gotcha, which he lip syncs as he's replacing Kong's tooth. Like, this movie is, I think it would be a disservice to say that it is stupid, but it is very straightforward and knows exactly what it is and just like rolls a 10 on what it is, right? Like, it just says, this is what we're doing, let's fucking do it, you know, like, let's not hold back this time. Which I felt like maybe was a problem with the last one, that they like, they were like, okay, this is what we're doing, but also we need to, you know, be like a serious movie a little bit, and we need to have a conspiracy theory for the humans to deal with. And this film makes no such pretensions. It's just like, the humans are there to explain why the monsters are angry, and then the monsters get angry. That's the whole thing. And Godzilla's pink this time, and I will say also, I'm a bit rambling right now, but the one last thing I do want to say is that one thing all of these movies have gotten really, really right is the sort of the acting of the giant monsters. Like, all of them have very distinct personalities. They obviously can't speak, but they're able to communicate with body language and tone and grunts in such a way that I think is actually really impressive. Like, there's long sequences in this movie where it's just Kong and another ape, and they are communicating, and there is no point in this movie where you don't know exactly what they are saying to one another. And I think that that's impressive. And I think that's been true of all of them from Skull Island forward. And I think maybe best exemplified by the three heads of Ghidorah in King of the Monsters, which all have distinct personalities, but that's a different episode of the show. But I don't know, it really gets it right. My one complaint here is that this movie is called Godzilla X Kong, but it should really just be like Kong featuring Godzilla, because it's a Kong movie. I think Toho must have signed some agreement with Legendary that gives Godzilla top billing every time, because he's a supporting character in Kong's movie. But yeah, it's great. I had a blast. I was grinning like an idiot for 99% of this movie. And the other 1% was me laughing hard enough to disturb people around me in the cinema. So, what did you think about this movie, Simon?
Oh,
I think you might have loved it also.
I love this film, and I do not like the other MonsterVerse movies. So different degrees of not like, but what's been really interesting to me is watching this, and in my like shock and surprise at how much I loved it, go back and rewatching Godzilla versus Kong, and kind of seeing how they're still stuck in trying to be serious. I completely blame Marvel for spectacle action movies to try and have some serious, like super serious undertones. And to see their evolution from versus to exactly as you say, they get to X and they're like, right, we're just going to fucking Power Rangers it. This is my Pacific Rim 2. Like, they're going to fight in daylight against blue sky repeatedly. We're going to fight. We're going to show them. We're going to pull the camera back and show it. It's like all the things I want to happen that I've been so annoyed at in other movies, they just corrected. And it's light, and the humans are there to support the lightness. There's no like intense human drama. Dan Stevens is the, like, every decade or so Hollywood discovers like cheeky English handsome guy can elevate any movie, and the current cheeky English handsome guy is Dan Stevens, and holy shit, he is good at it. There is no reason whatsoever for him to storm in on his dentist, flying dentist truck, and lip sync "I got you" to his like clamp he's about to put over Godzilla, because no one can see him up there. He's literally singing to nobody, but he's having the best time. And because
that's,
he's
not
having
true.
The best time,
he's singing to us, Simon. He's singing to us.
You know, I think that might be it. Is an appreciation that this is all for us. And throughout this whole movie, he has got a glint in his eye, even when there's like death approaching, and he is so irreverent, but not sort of annoyingly so. He's just brilliant, and I can't think of anyone better who could have been in that role. And I like Rebecca Hall is fantastic in this. Brian Tyree Henry, who I first saw in Bullet Train, is kind of I really like watching him do different things, because he is kind of the return to that fidgety YouTuber, and I think he's great, and he's not just a comic black guy. Like, I think he brings really good characterization to what he does. He's a great actor. And there is just Rebecca Hall going into this cave that is this ancient forgotten race buried under the earth. These runes have not been seen by anyone apart a few of them on Skull Island, but, and she sits down and reads this like it's fan fiction in English. She reads everything without even like squinting. Oh, I think this says no. So in the beginning, and just gives this entire exposition dump, and I just think this film knows exactly what it is and what it's trying
that's
to
not
do
fair. What she'd read the glyphs on Skull Island, of which she is an expert, Simon. Jeez.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, it's like, oh, no one's seen this place for years. So anyway, these glyphs say 47 years ago, Godzilla.
I think they even say like, oh, it's the same glyphs as Skull Island, and then like wink at the audience. At their
yes, yeah. Like, it knows that this is not a stupid film, but it's a straightforward film. And it's really well shot. It's beautifully choreographed. There's great personality between... So there's a great part where Kong is trying to draw Godzilla down into the Hollow Earth Gateway. That's in Egypt, of course. It is next to a pyramid. And Godzilla's like... Godzilla spends most of this movie charging, like, to get ready for the big fight. And they should have put in, like, the Wally charging sound when he was done. That would have been great. But he comes storming in because... Even though Kong's been on Skull Island for like hundreds of years, now Godzilla's decided he can't be in the same earth. So he comes to kill Kong, and Kong's like, dude, I don't want to fight. And then they have a fight, and it's just fantastic. And it's Kong trying to not fight.
This goes back to what I'm saying about like the giant monsters fighting, like that whole sequence with Kong being like, gee, I just want you to just come with me, man. Like,
yes.
Like, you can basically hear him saying, we don't have to like each other, but I need your goddamn help. Like, come with me. Because, like shit's about to go down. I need your help. And you can hear him saying it, and it's great.
And this is so far the other end of the spectrum from minus one, where you've got this classic huge, like, city-sized monster that moves slowly. And then the next one, there's literally one moment where Godzilla sprints like he's doing the hurdles, gets out of a hole and just sprints into camera like it's nothing. It's just brilliant. It's brilliant in how it's conceived to be that. These films are not made by accident. Like, someone decided it's time to fucking just other end of that spectrum and give the people what they want. And it's so much better for it. We haven't got the terrible acting from whatever her name was, Millie, what's her face. We haven't got the human, like, Monarch did the human drama really, really well. And I'm really glad Monarch exists, because you've got that human drama in the middle. You've got minus one at one end of this terrible metaphor of death. And then you've got what I hope is now the American Godzilla movies that are establishing themselves as Power Rangers, but big fucking, like, monster Power Rangers. And it's fantastic. We can have all these things. You can love straightforward movies, even if they're not as quote-unquote important as, like, more serious movies. And I really hope people see this with that openness in their sort of appreciation for how well made this film is. I mean, it's just brilliant. There's mm-hmm. only one part where the plot kind of the pace drops. I'm not really into Kong. I don't find Kong that interesting. I fucking love Godzilla as a monster. Kong is just big monkey, but he's got so much personality in this.
That's not fair, Simon. He's a big ape. Those are different things.
My mistake. I'm sorry, big ape. And there's a fantastic reference to a great Indiana Jones moment as well that is done really, really well. And Kong's got a lot of personality, but there's an extended scene where he's, like, being led through underworld forest by a little monkey. And Big Monkey and Little Monkey kind of have comedy moments. That's kind of boring. But the rest of the film, it's only boring because it's not the rest of the film, which is incredibly exciting. Like, this film is, gloriously colorful.
I would argue, too, that, like, that stuff is, the pace drops. But, like, a movie like this also kind of needs a pace drop in the middle.
Yeah, I suppose so.
You know,
yeah,
right? Like, so. It can't be all action all the time. Otherwise, it just becomes stupid.
I get deeply suspicious of young versions of things.
And, like, yeah, like, the baby, the young monkey is kind of annoying, but also, like, the fact that they bond and the young monkey experiences compassion for the first time becomes important to the finale, so it's fine. And, like, sure, that might be a spoiler, but you knew that was going to happen when you saw it in the trailer, absolutely. So, like, it's not, like, this movie, you know, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, and in this case, it's not even about the journey, it's about, like, because, like, you know what's going to happen, but it's about how well it's executed. And, like, the fights are glorious, and, like, the animal acting is glorious. This movie knows it's the first one of all of them. It's not, for me, it's not the first one, but it's the one that has hit the balance as close to perfect as possible of these mm-hmm. ones. And I will die on the hill that I will still say that King of the Monsters is probably my favorite. But honestly, the only thing that's really tipping it at this point is I think that the score in King of the Monsters is better than in this one. And the score in this one is great fun. It's a Junkie XL score, and it is great. So do with that information what you will. I guess the other thing is that a lot of the fights in King of the Monsters are at night, which is a little bit harder to see. Like, this one is very unabashedly, like, we are in daylight. You can see what's happening. Godzilla is pink now.
Yeah, it's really colorful. It's an extremely colorful movie.
Which is just refreshing, honestly. It's very refreshing.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wish that there were... And there is a bit of a twist in the middle, a character reveal in the middle that I'm not going to spoil now, that is great. But I just kind of wish that there was... And I wish this about most of the other MonsterVerse movies, is that I kind of wish Legendary had licensed more of the, like, original Toho monsters. And there's more of them, and that's another thing they sort of answered. There are definitely more of them in this one than there have been in the other ones, so that's good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a great time at the movies. If you can see this on the biggest screen you can find, you should definitely do that while it's still in theaters. It's still in cinemas now. That is how we saw it. You should definitely see it that way. And This is the kind of movie that, you know, I already have a 55-inch 4K TV, and I wish that I had a larger one with better sound. And I already have a surround sound system. I want more. I want more for movies like this, you know? Like, it's... Yeah.
For sure.
If only we didn't live in late-stage capitalism, I would do that. But we do, so... Anyway.
How many stars are you landing on?
For me, I think for now I'm landing at 4 stars, 4 out of 5. That may change in time, though. It'll be interesting once this one is available at home to see which one I come back to the most frequently. Because I did really enjoy this one, and it might give King of the Monsters a run for its money. And I'm not shy, as you are probably aware, I'm not shy about like changing ratings over time as my opinion changes. So.
Yeah, I'm at a 4 now as well, and for all the right reasons. It's a brilliant, brilliant film. And out of all the MonsterVerse, this is the one. If I could choose to watch any of the movies again, it would be this one by a country mile. It's not even close. It's just got everything I want in this kind of film. And the more ridiculous it gets, the more I'm into it. And it's not just ridiculous like Sharknado ridiculous. It's really well made and designed. The production design is fantastic. The editing, the shots, the choreography, it's really, really well done.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Wingard is a good director. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely watch The Guest, which he also directed with Dan Stevens. And he's done a number of other films that are good as well. And you should watch all of them. I mean, mainly because Dan Stevens is great, but Adam Wingard makes good movies, is all I'm trying to say. Except for, I think there's one that he made that I think is bad, but I don't remember what it is. But yeah, The Guest, You're Next are both great. So, and he made the last movie too. Like the one where you could say, like, if you could think that Godzilla versus Kong might be a first draft for this one, I think that would be an accurate way to put it. He sort of like found the things that worked about the last one and did them better in this one. So.
Oh, he did the Blair Witch sequel. That's probably the bad one, right?
And yeah. I think Death Note is the bad one. Yeah, the Blair Witch sequel is not great. But I've been thinking about revisiting it lately because it does have some great stuff in it. It just feels a bit like... What's the best way to put it? I feel like when that movie was first announced, it was announced as being called The Woods, and it was not... They didn't say that it was a Blair Witch sequel. And I feel like they announced ahead of its release that it was actually a Blair Witch sequel, and that was a mistake. I feel like if they had released it as The Woods and let that be a surprise, we would have collectively, as a society, accepted it better. But my bigger problem with it was just that, like, you know, it's more recent, so they go into the woods with all of this technology, and rather than finding ways to use the technology against them, they just strip them of it, like, immediately. And it just becomes the first movie again. But anyway, that's a different podcast episode.
Okay. But yes, go see Godzilla while you can. I'm kind of annoyed it's not in IMAX anymore here. But I am going to go and try and catch it on. It was showing in Screen X.
That's how downtown. I saw it. I saw it in Screen X, which is an experience. But this movie is doing gangbusters business too. Like, there's a good chance it's going to be in cinemas for a while.
Okay, good.
But you should definitely go and see it and fuel that, because the more people see this one, the higher the chances they make another one. So please go see this movie, because I desperately want more Godzilla in my life. Go do that.
Okay, should we wrap it there?
Yeah, we should probably wrap it there. The Beast is coming out in Canadian cinemas on the 19th, and we both think you should watch it. 4 stars each. And Godzilla X Kong is great and fun, and we both think you should see it. So go do that in cinemas now. My train of thought just totally derailed. So what I was going to say is thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed our commentary, if you've enjoyed the reviews, if you enjoyed the show in general, please consider helping us out. There's a couple ways you can do that. Probably there's two really impactful ways. One, we have a Patreon. You can subscribe to that for as little as $2 Canadian a month, and you get a whole bonus episode every week. This week, we talked about some formative animated projects from our childhood, along with some big misses, appreciable swings and misses in cinema, which I thought was interesting. And yeah, for $2 Canadian a month at minimum, you can get access to that. And I think we talk a little more freeform and it's a little more interesting. But you can also, you know, subscribe on your podcasting platform of choice. We're on basically all of them. But obviously Apple and Spotify are the big ones. Or, you know, give this episode a rating, give us a review, give us a like, tell your friends. Those are help us get in front of more earballs, and we will appreciate you forever. If you'd like to connect with us, there's too much social media now, so the easiest way to do that is going to be to go to our respective homepages. The show is awesomefriday.ca, Simon is temporarypen.com, and I am at stretched.ca, and you can see all of our recent work at all of those places. And reach out, let us know what you thought. Let us know what you thought of the Beast. Let us know what you thought about Godzilla X Kong. And we would love to hear about that. Last but not least, we are here in Vancouver on the unceded ancestral territory of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish Nations. And thank you one more time, ever so much, for joining us on this awesome Friday.